Mr. Man, Reel 8. What were you doing at Taulo?
Well, Taulo was more or less just a camp to, what do you call it, a transit camp. Moved into Taulo and just then waited for the train to come in to take us to go abroad, up to the shipping port.
Do you remember moving through the village onto the train?
Yes, when it came the day of departure from the camp, we were all for the fell in the battalion, and we marched down from Fir Tree to Taulo Station. And there the train was already in, the troop train. There was also the band on the station. And I've never forgotten it this day. There was a hymn played there, Abide With Me. And I always remember that. It's my favourite hymn, I think. So we just got into the carriages.
Did the population turn out to see you off?
There were a few in the town hall itself, not on the station. They didn't let any of them come down onto the platform. But going to the town hall itself, there's quite a number of us have been around there. We all, I think we marched past at the arms at the trail, not sure the arms. Just down the station, or was it on the trains? And from there we parted and the band was still playing. And that was more or less the start of our next adventures.
Were you excited by the prospect of going abroad?
I think we were really, yes, all of us, because even going back to the Hindon there, I mean, no, even when we were on training, or finished our training, we used to say when we wanted to get in with, I suppose we were young and daft at the time, didn't realise the consequences, but everybody was keen to go abroad and get into action, and then there used to be the song about, while Russia bleeds, we blanco up. We were all keen to go abroad, there's no doubt about that. But as I say, we didn't know what we were going into.
Where did you go to? Where did you sail from?
Greenock, Scotland.
What are your memories of the journey?
Well, the start of it definitely was, we got on to it was Durban Castle Line, the ship that took us. I guess you said it. It was Durban Castle Line. Anyhow, we got out to sea and more or less to the Irish Sea.
Was it a convoy? It was with you? Were you part of a convoy?
The convoy gathered as you more or less got, well, I said, a few ships from Scotland and others later joined you from, was Liverpool or all the other places on the coast, and you got maybe Bristol as well as you got down there. But I remember as we were going down the Clyde and looking back, and you could see the silhouette of the land and the way it sort of left us in the distance and away out to sea. And then as I say, further out to sea, the convoy just started getting bigger and bigger. I don't know how many ships were in it all together, but we had destroyer escorts. There was some, you said, did I remember it? I remember it all right, because I think the first 3 to 4 days I was a poor sailor. Oh, I never felt so bad in all my life. Really, see, I wasn't the only one, of course, but the on the decks, the sleeping arrangement, I remember the first night at sea, there was hammocks, and these hammocks were hooked up as what you might call the ceiling, and there was one hammock place, and the next one was half to the length of that and half to the other, so you weren't all head to head, as it were. And when they're up, you couldn't see any of the ceiling for hammocks, and those who hadn't got a hammock just used to sleep on the bare deck. And there was the tables that you used to get your meal at, mess deck. They are on the forms, sat on at the table. And then in the morning, after the first night, we rolled up our hammocks, and we all had to be stuck at one end of this section of the boat. And we went to have a wash, and it was right in the stern. Also, remember, it was a big curve and wash basins all around. I think I got about halfway through me washing and that, and I felt queer. I thought, oh no, dash up into the fresh air on deck. And that was the start of it. And as I say, I lasted about three days or 4 days, seasick. And I didn't get, during those days, I didn't get down from the hill and not, I was more or less on deck all the time. And there was that Terry Hall, I remember him. He used to bring me bits of crust, and I managed to nibble away at these bits of crust, and that was my meal for the first few days.
They didn't bother you with duties of any kind, did they?
No, they not on board ship. No, of course, the Navy did all the outlooks and that.
Was it pretty crowded, the boat and the sleeping accommodation?
As I say, this deck allocated to us, there's other regiments on board as well. And this particular one where we were, the ceiling was literally covered by hammocks all hooked up there. And then there was still some of you on the deck below, so you might be wondering what it was like.
Could you get into and sleep in the hammock pretty well?
Oh yes, after it was a bit of a struggle to get into a hammock if the people each side of you had already got into there, you had to sort of wriggle your way between how to get on. But once you were in there, comfortable enough with a hammock to sleep in, better than sleeping on a hard table top or a foam.
What was the food like that you got on board the ship? Was it better than what you had in the land?
Yeah, I'll never forget about the food on board. The bread was really fresh. Really fresh bread. Probably be beans or maybe a bit of bacon or something like that. What I remember, and then it come to tea time, it would more or less be a bit of bread and cheese and a bit of jam.
Was there a canteen on the boat?
I don't remember a canteen on it.
As by now the journey to Africa was much shorter, you didn't have to go right round the bottom.
I think we were the first convoy to go into the Med. And,
so how long were you on the boat?
I think it was 8 days.
Did they organise some entertainment for you to keep you occupied?
No, there was a piano in one of the sections of the board. You used to get a sing-song in that, but they had a bit sing-song, or others would be in groups playing cards or things like that. That's one thing they forced. There was always somebody to give you some sort of entertainment, even if it was just singing. If you had a pianist as well with it. And the popular songs where you could all join in.
Housey Housey or Bingo?
Yes, that's true, it was that. Yeah, Bingo. Housey Housey. Call you on. Just trying to think what you got if you got house up. I can't remember paying for tickets, you know, coppers. Maybe we did pay or coppers for a ticket. But they definitely had Housey Housey, remember that, Housey Housey and the playing of the piano.
Boxing tournaments, did they do anything like that?
Not boxing, the exile used to get, you were allocated towns where you could go up onto the main deck, and you used to run round the deck. That was a form of exercise, of course. And then another thing, well, you would get lifeboat drill where you actually report to a lifeboat station on board this one. And there was a few of them because they were emptying the stomachs as well overboard. A few lost the hats and I think they even wanted to lost the false teeth as well. And overboard, not again at that. The escort vehicles, I remember them firing death charges well on the outskirts of the convoy. couldn't remember. Up then, they used to chase around the, say, the perimeter of the convoy, going around it. So yes. There was nothing to get alarmed about on the convoy, thank goodness. Landed us in North Africa at Philippeville, where we landed.
What were your first impressions of North Africa?
Well, the heat, I think, was the first thing. When we got there, there was the Arabs about, and that, of course, they were not wherever possible. But there was sand, plenty of sand, I remember.
What date did you arrive at Philippeville?
Philippeville, it would be early August, if I remember. We weren't there very long. But after docking, we were taken to a transit camp, which was roughly about 12 miles out of Philippeville. It was on the coast nearly as well. I remember in this camp, there was a few of the soldiers there who'd been wounded in action and sort of given the cushy jobs now. But you got the comments, get your knees brown, because we were just rookies going out there into the sunshine. And it was under canvas, and a bit hilly in that area as well, because we did a bit of small manoeuvring in that. Remember, one was for us to be in battle order, and we had to run up a hill, and by the time we got to the top, we puffed out our breath, you know, with the heat and that, the tiredness going. And from there, once we got onto the ridge, we had to turn round, lay down, and aim back to where we'd come from, where there was dummies and that, and they were firing live ammunition at them. But we'd only been 2 or 3 days in this camp, I remember, and the fellas in one day, the officer, and he marched us down to Philippeville. We just got to the sort of the outskirts of it and going to send it down for what it was. And then we had to march back again, so that involved over 20 miles, the route march. We hadn't really got acclimatised at that date. And going back to the camp, the road, more or less a coast road it was, just sand each side of it and a bit of tarmac, and you would see one or two of the local automobiles going up and down, and one would make a dash off the side. It was a case of who's chicken and that keeps going, and you're able to go through. And maybe halfway back to camp, the officer took us down onto the beach, and he says, right, strip off. So we all stripped off, apart from, I think, it was about 4 lads who had to stand guard over the stripping off, because the Arabs kept wandering up then as well. And they said, who can swim? So, of course, we all gaily put our hands up, those who could. And he says, right, you the lifesavers, all in together. So we went into the sea. And I remember, so as we got into the water, it would look like going off a wall. The sea went straight down deep. Anyhow, we all had a good bit swim there. And then we came back out and dried off in the sun a bit. And then dressed, all in, and marched back to the camp. And they said that these bits of exercise and that. And that's really what it should be. We could go down to Philippeville. Oh, and then when we got back to the camp, the commanding officer was there, and he gave the officer a rollick, and he said he shouldn't have marched us so far in the early stages. I'm just being up and they got passed off all right.
Did the climate affect you in any way, physically and health wise?
It affected some more than others, and of course, you got to know that if you became sick or ill through sunburn, you were put on a charge because of your fault. You shouldn't have been in the sun. Well, it's all right saying that at the same time. There wasn't a tree about the place to cover the shade. There was your tents, but of course you were out, and it was out of case of pulling down your shirt sleeves and keep covered up.
Had you been issued with the khaki drill, the
yes,
Middle East uniform?
Yes, we'd issued with khaki drill before we got onto the boat. In England, we were issued with that, with the short trousers and that, but it was dripping wet through your shirts and that by the time we'd done a bit of marching in there. We didn't wear the pith helmets, which were one says you'll be transported to Africa and that. And, but even on the march down to Philip, we had to march down with a tin axe on, and that was hot enough as well.
It was a tented camp, I think you said. Was it a tented camp?
Yes, I was tented.
What were the facilities like within the camp itself?
Well, from what I remember, there was almost a small marquee was there, which was the dining area. The food was much about the same, what we'd had at home, bare essentials and that. As regards toilets and that, well, that was the start of where the toilets used to be dug out like a trench, and a pole was extended across them for you to sit on. There was no flush water or anything like that. And a bit of sacking was put round it to give a bit of privacy. And there'd never be, you know, three or four of you sat on the pole all at one time.
Were you issued with toilet paper, for example?
Well, from what I remember, when there was toilet paper available, you were issued with three sheets. And that was classed as one up, one down, and one burning. that's when there was toilet paper. Otherwise, it was a case of improvisation. I remember on the troop ship going out. I don't know what it was. But anyway, it was talking about hygiene. Indian troops, there was an Indian battalion on. And I remember they had the great coats on and the helmets, collars up, and they were shaving.
Did you meet the African flies at this point in your experience?
Yeah, well, mosquito was one of those for malaria, of course, and to counteract that, you were issued with pills called mepocrines. These mepocrines, you could take them, but if with some it affected more than others, but some people, they really got a yellow, almost jaundiced look about them through taking the mepocrines. I never got malaria, not at all. Later on, in the service, I ended with sandfly fever, which was another thing. But getting back to the malaria, they were also issued with tablets which were to put into water to sterilise your water in the water bottle.
Was the water rationed?
Not at that stage, no. No, the water wasn't rushing at all. It had been for troops who had been then on the desert campaign and that. And from what I understand, talking to some of the older soldiers, this is getting more advanced now, but there's one period where they were rationed to 1 pint a day. And that 1 pint of water was for self hygiene, pulling and washing and all sorts of what you could do in that. No water shortage in North Africa, not when we were there. You get corned beef, of course. You could open a tin of corned beef and you didn't bother to slice it out of town, because if the sun had got at it, you could pour it out.
And the food, you said, was basically the same that you've been used to.
Basically the same, yes. So, you know, there was bread, cheese and jam were the main things. Potatoes. Even in Egypt as well, you used to get like Egyptian potatoes, which were a sweet potato. You almost think they'd be sugared. But potatoes, you were given them. I won't say you got a good ration. You were given a ration or a spoonful, whatever it was. You could also have eaten a bit more. Greens, very rarely saw the greens come along. Mainly paper, and you used to get dehydrated papers. Potatoes as well, and I'm not sure whether they've got cabbages or not, a bit of green, but not a lot of that. Fruit stuff, you could maybe buy a melon off one of the so-called wogs, as we used to call them, the Irish, and get a bit of fruit that way.
Was your mail censored?
Oh yes, all mail was censored. It used to write your letter, or you were issued with field cards where you could put a certain amount on them. You were limited, of course, but they all had to be censored by an officer, or you a town officer or nothing, whatever it was. And you would find a letter somewhere, which I found when I come home, that had come from abroad, that they all had an officer's signature on where they'd been sent. So if there was anything in that shouldn't have been, it was crossed out. You weren't allowed, of course, to say exactly where you were. The at that time, North Africa and then Italy as well. The reason that area was known as CMF, Central Mediterranean Forces.
Did the natives resent foreigners being in their country? Did they show it?
I suppose they did, really, but they didn't show it to the extent of what they would show it nowadays. I suppose in one way you were more or less not exactly rulers of the land, but respected you in one sense face to face, but you back it, I think, with a different situation. You have to be very careful what you ate and that, and even with their customs and that, be very careful.
Did they give you lectures on the ship coming over to prepare you for life in in another land, in Africa, for example?
Basically, I would say they would talk about that, protect yourself against the heat and that, as to where you drank from and what you should actually eat. Don't eat open food that had been open to flies and likes of that, which you could have gone in. And of course, there was a big emphasis on going with women, with the likes of VD cases and that. A big emphasis put on that, but it was a risky business, I think, if you went with them. Certain lads had been with them, and that's when the Arabs could turn a bit nasty if they caught them out. You never paid you to go about on your own. Something could happen then. But in your usual groups and that, you were basically safe.
Was it still a relatively exciting time for you, adventurous time for you? Were you very young lads at this point?
Oh, we were. You see, in England, we couldn't really wait to get out and see some action. Because when you got in action, it was a different story. But anyhow, in North Africa, no, we tried to get acclimatised to it, but before really we knew where we were pulling across to Italy.
You weren't there very long, were you?
No, in Africa, only a few weeks, that's all it was. And then from Philippeville...
Were you there when some men drowned, I think, swimming? Were you in that particular...
I can't just place that at all. No, I can't...
It might have been another group, of course.
I can't bring to mind anybody losing their life while we were there in Philippeville. So you were out of what had been a North African campaign. I mean, there wasn't the fear of mines in that area, landmines or anything like that. No. Basically, it was land at Philippeville into the transit camp, a bit of training, and then from Philippeville, the borders down to Berserker.
Were you still expecting to be together right through the future ahead of you, staying together as a Durham Light Infantry?
We thought we might have been, but from what had later Colonel Fillingham, who was the commanding officer, it was Colonel Jeffries who was the commanding officer when we went abroad, but he didn't go with us. But prior to that was Colonel Fillingham, and he had tried to get the battalion to keep together, and when they were called to go in action, to stay together. But that didn't materialise. No, it was a case when we got to North Africa, we thought we would be split up and posted to the Durham Light Infantry Battalions. Of course, even that didn't come true. There only some went.
Who was commanding the battalion now?
Well, it was Colonel Jeffries in England, but we really didn't have a colonel when we went out. And I suppose, really, looking back, we could say we were just reinforcements going out. Even some of the officers, and platoon officers who had been with us, they didn't go out with us. There were some officers, but...
And just to place the accuracy of the event, The whole of the battalion had been moved, had it, at this point. You were all going out.
Cowlaw, yeah, I mentioned previously. Yeah, from Cowlaw, all of us went down to Philippeville. And it was once into Italy that was split us up.
When did you leave Philippeville?
As near as I can remember, it would be the early days of September. And all the Salerno landing was the 9th of September 1943. That was it. So maybe it's about a week before that, I would think, which was from Philippeville to Bizerta, which was on the coast, and there they had landing craft, and that went across the Med in that.
Was it a long journey?
No. It's from what I remember, we only had one breakfast. Oh, we landed in Italy, and that was out to sea. It was a big convoy, and it was out to sea, and I also remember there was a bit bacon and beans and a bit bread. And whilst we were out into Salerno Bay, pretty well out as well, but you could still get tired wave movements, and we had this here, bacon and beans and a bit of bread, and that was the early hours of the morning.
Did you know where you were going? Had they told you?
No, I say no, we didn't know before we got on the boat, but it was rumoured afterwards that we were going across to Sicily or Italy, because Sicily had already been invaded. You see, and there was some light infantry there, and in the process of going through Sicily, we thought we might have been joining them.
Had they, I mean, obviously you would be going into an action situation in the near future. Had you had any talks upon the German soldier and what to expect from him and his weapons?
Yeah, well, we had that in England, with the education officer, as regards different weapons and that he had. They did prepare us before we got to Italy, don't know whether it was at Bizerta or on the boat, with a few Italian words. And for Germans it was Tedeschi. And then of course the Italian word, the first one I also remember, was aqua, which was water.
And at this point in time, you were still anxious to get into action, were you?
Oh, yes, we were keen to get into action. But I think more or less, when we did eventually get within the small arms range and that, things seemed to change a bit. You took a bit different view of it. But nevertheless, we were young. We were young. Even itself, when you think some of the lads as well, who were just as keen in action, and of course they got no further than the beach.